This is the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and hitting subscribe on your friend's phone without them knowing. Coming to you from the Kitchen Studios in downtown Raleigh. This episode is sponsored in part by Spot On, tech that helps your business grow. Request a demo at spoton.com. And Joe Van Gogh Coffee, serving the community from seed to cup, taking particular care at every step to honor the bean. And now, forgetting to refill your water, it's Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And today, I want to know, have you heard of Littleton, North Carolina? Well, if not, you're about to, because we have the chef from acclaimed restaurant Blue Jay Bistro out there and already has gone to the number one seed in the shoewear sneaker game, sorry, Matt Register, of the North Carolina Footwear Chef Series. Yeah. Soon to hear more about that, but one... Ashley Fleming of Blue Jay Bistro. Welcome, Chef Ashley.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Yeah.
Thank you. Shout out for my kicks. Thank you.
I know. Well, good job, Matt.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk more about those. But before
attention to detail over here. But yeah, before we jump into the show, hello, listeners. How are you? I'm speaking to you directly right now. You're just sitting there driving in traffic. You just adjusted the volume because Matt boomed your ears out so loud.
That's I like to do that.
Bring it back up. Bring it back up. We're here again. All right. Welcome. So I'm talking to you, to our listeners, because thank you for listening to the show for the amount of time that you probably have. We've been doing this for 5.5, we're getting close to 6 years of doing this podcast. And in that time, we've appreciated all the reviews and the follows and the subscriptions, but we'd appreciate a little bit more if you have it in your time, in your purview, to go over there to the old iTunes machine and just type a little positive reinforcement for us. And who knows, maybe we'll read it on the show, because we have fantastic shows coming up, such as Dean Neff, our chef Dean Neff out there in Wilmington of Seabird Restaurant. And then after him, we have Big Spoon Roasters. You've seen Big Spoon out in the marketplace. We're going to get some hot bee and honey talk with Queen's Orders Honey, Justin Orders, out in Charlotte, North Carolina. And then Chef Saif Rahman of Vidrio out here in downtown Raleigh is going to hit us up. And Nick Singh of the Nomad in Hillsboro and the Viceroy in Durham shows up. And we just added Kevin McLaughlin of Lorema Coffee in Rocky Mount to the list. So, got some great shows coming up all over the state. But right now, as Matt mentioned before, we're bringing it all the way out there, right next to Lake Gaston, this beautiful, not so sleepy town anymore because of all this activation happening, but we're talking about Littleton, and more specifically, Blue Jay Bistro, and that's why we have Ashley in studio. So again, welcome. But Ashley, Littleton?
What's the greatest?
What made you head yourself out to Littleton?
You know, it was a weird time. I mean, it was post-COVID, and we were all kind of, every chef I know was displaced. I mean, we were all looking for work and kind of figuring out what our next step was. And I found a job posting on LinkedIn that seemed more of like a sort of an operational job. I kind of wanted out of cooking after COVID.
Yeah.
A lot of chefs and friends that I know kind of wanted to do the same thing. And so, you know, I applied for that and thought this will be great. 72 miles from my house. I lived in Durham, and so I was like, yeah, it's commutable. It's fine. I'll make it work. And it has morphed into a lot more than like an operational job. So when I went out there, you know, the owners, I met with them, and they were going through my resume, and they were like, you know, this all looks great, but like, you're a chef. I mean, you're like stacked. Your resume is a chef. Like, why do you want to make the change to operations? And so I kind of explained like what had happened to us during COVID and kind of, you know, a lot of chefs I know, I mean, it was like you kind of had your heart ripped out a little bit there towards the end when you had to shut down your restaurants. And it was just a really bad chapter. And there had been a couple of bad chapters prior to that. And so I was just kind of like wanting to get out. And, you know, the owners kept trying to talk to me like, don't you want to be the chef? Don't you want to be the chef? We haven't posted a job for one yet, but yeah. You kind of are here. And I was like, no. And I kept telling them why. And, you know, they finally convinced me like, well, what if we just promised you we would do everything the right way? And I was like, no, people say that all the time. But they
sales
really...
Salespeople.
Yeah. They have really done everything the right way. You know, they've been really genuine and true, and they treat us so differently out there. So it would be hard to pass up that opportunity. And I've kind of fallen in love with Littleton. It didn't take long. I mean, it's a beautiful place.
So wait, are you still living in Durham and commuting?
No.
Okay.
I was for a while.
Yeah.
Probably like the first year, I kind of commuted back and forth and...
hope you were listening to a lot of podcasts, namely the North Carolina Food and Beverage podcast.
Yeah. A lot of podcasts.
Have you written your review, Ashley? Come on.
Oh.
Just lie to us.
Internet reviews scare me. Open Table, they're scary.
So, that is true.
You know, to be fair, 5 stars or nothing less. So, but now I sold my house in Durham, and so now I'm a full-time Littleton resident. I love it out there.
Yeah, and just for, like I mentioned before, Lake Gaston area, but... So those that don't know where Littleton is, if you're in Durham, you're basically just going east, a little northeast. It's close to the border of Virginia, right there, right next to Lake Gaston, right?
Straight shot down 85, or up 85, I guess.
Yeah, it's a pretty quick little drive. We went for Memorial Day weekend and went to the ocean. It felt like the ocean. It was a big-ass lake. It's funny, Lake Gaston's deceiving. You see, like, you're in one little pocket, and you're like, oh, this is quaint. This is a nice little lake.
Yeah.
And then the folks that we were with who had a lake house out there, they're like, oh, no, it's 9 miles long. I went, what?
Yeah.
They go, yeah, if you hang out this little corner, and then as we got into the boat and we went around, I realized, oh, no, it just keeps going and going and going and going.
They're like, yeah,
this is a massive, massive lake, of which, because of that, there's a lot of people that vacation and or live there, and then they've activated it to be like a resort space, right? I mean, it's... I guess it's almost kind of like our Ozarks in a way. Like, it's a place where there are restaurants right on the water, bars. There's just, like, things to do, fun for the whole family and all that. And you can embezzle money and launder it and then, you know, murder some people and put them in the ocean. Just like our own Ozarks.
Yeah, fair.
All right. Well, before we get into Littleton specifically, because we will, but... That was a reference to the Netflix show, Matt. Did you not know what I was doing?
No, we knew that.
Disclaimer, no one at
sure
PJ Bistro
is gonna...
involved in that.
Excuse me? They're not?
We're not in any way involved in anything.
By the way, I know we every now and then talk about television. Can I say that Ozarks, is it on season 4 now or 3? Whatever it is. Whatever the recent one is, snooze fest.
Ugh.
Snooze fest. First two seasons, awesome. Every time Felicia's like, you want to watch another episode of Ozark, I'm like, yeah, that's good because I'm getting tired, so let's throw that on. It'll just put me to sleep.
Help you sleep. Yeah, that's not good. But we don't also do show reviews, so.
Well, prior to, I want to know a little bit what led you to here, because you were a chef and you were kind of over it. So what were you over? What led you to that point? Because you don't just become over it real fast. I assume you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, I have spent my entire life in kitchens.
Where'd you grow up?
I'm from Houston. From Houston, Texas, originally.
That's
right. So I spent my entire life in kitchens. I've been literally working side by side with my dad since I was 6. Started me young. Taught me how to roll silverware and wash dishes, and I was back there grinding in his restaurant. I went to the CIA in New York and, kind of forged my way, and I've been had a long stint in country clubs, which was fun. I was older when I graduated culinary school, and so country clubs provided a really good amount of stability and good pay and benefits and, things that you need when you're 30, like health insurance.
Well, get back into your dad's restaurant. What kind of restaurant was it?
So my dad, when I was younger, my dad owned a Mexican restaurant, like a Tex-Mex restaurant called Mexican Joe's.
Sure. Texas, makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
So kind of grew up doing that. My mom was the plant lady. So she would come in and water all the plants because it was the 80s and plants were big in restaurants. So, big background in that. And then when I get older, my dad worked at Red Lobster for a long time. So a lot of Darden restaurants. And it was back when Red Lobster was sourcing whole fish.
Mm.
So they were doing things really different. It was before Darden bought them. And when I was a little kid, the fish trucks would come and whole monkfish when you're a kid is terrifying. It's
it's a big, ugly fish.
It's definitely not sexy. So
yeah,
it'll give you nightmares. But stuff like that was really cool to be around as a kid. And, on Sundays, I used to do inventory with him. I'd go in and count the fish and weigh the fish and... So then it kind of all went downhill from there.
you got the bug really early. Yeah.
So I'm curious, because I think a lot of chefs wonder this, why you, it seems like you have a extensive background in restaurants. What was the need to go then to do actual training? Like, why did you feel that was necessary?
So that was my dad. Mm-hmm. you know, he told my brother and I, he's like, I don't care what you do. Please just do anything but this. I don't care if you are a trash collector. I really don't care what you do. Just please do something else. And my brother is smart and not hard-headed, and so he listened, and I'm stubborn. And so if you tell me not to do something, I'm like, bet, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
So here we are. And so I went to art school for a while to do something else, and then I was, like, always working in restaurants to pay the bills and kind of continued to have that in the background. And then finally I was like, I told my dad, I was like, yeah, I really like this. Like, I really enjoy what I'm doing. And he was like, okay, if you're going to do this, then I want you to do it the right way. You need to find a culinary school and you need to go ahead and finish your education.
Nice.
I had had like a spotty track record with education in high school. And so I think for me, it was like something that he and I needed to accomplish. Like, I needed to prove to him that I was disciplined enough to accomplish something. And I think he wanted me to achieve that for my life, to like prove that I could be disciplined enough to pursue something. And I think had I not done that, I would have continued to waver, like, non-committal stints of, like, I'll do this for a little while, and then I'll go do something else. Like, the CIA was really good for somebody that has, like, a real lack of attention and discipline to kind of, like, instill, like, this is the thing you do.
Yeah.
And so it was really good for me.
This is not just something I get paid for, but it's actually, like, my career path now.
Yeah, it's your craft.
I think that's a really good reason. Yeah, yeah. It's, like, it's validating not only for you, but in your dad's eyes. That, like, okay, I can do this. I'm serious. And here we go. So... what brought you to North Carolina?
My dad, again. So when I was at the CIA, I went to the CIA in like 2005, and my dad retired for like the first time, and then subsequently did many more times after he was here. But he retired, and my aunt and uncle were living here, so he moved here when I was in New York. And I had graduated school. I'd gone back to Houston. I was super happy to be there. I had gotten married, and then we moved to Maryland, and I was like, this is the worst place on earth, and I super need out of here.
Oh, no.
Sorry, anybody who's from Maryland.
That's the worst.
That's all right. This is not the Maryland Food and Beverage Podcast.
Yeah.
Thank God.
I hate the Commanders, too. So.
That's right. Yeah.
But I got really into hockey, so the Caps are cool. But
okay.
So I just really wanted out of Maryland.
But the Canes are cooler.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay. For sure. I don't want to get like stalled.
Don't piss people off. Go Canes. Big Go Canes.
So you know, I just really wanted out of Maryland, and so I started my job search going either back to Houston, closer to my family, my mom was still there, or North Carolina. And North Carolina was the first place that I found a job that I was really interested in. It happened to be at University of North Carolina, which I had kind of always had an affection for when I was growing up, because I was a big soccer player and Mia Hamm had gone there, and so I always kind of had a thing for UNC anyway. So it was a cool fit for me to go back and work there, like, as an adult. So that was how I ended up back here.
Cool. And, so what were you doing in Durham that, or what restaurant ended, because of the pandemic?
It was a restaurant in Apex.
Okay. Which was it?
The Pecan Salem.
The Pecan Salem?
They're still open.
I don't know that
and
place.
They've changed directions, and I think now they're in the direction that they always wanted to be in.
Yeah.
So
but sometimes it takes a pandemic, you don't have to say global pandemic to create that happen.
It was a really short stint for us. I mean, it was like, it wasn't even 90 days that we were there, my sous chef and I, and I don't think it was going to be a good spot for us. So
yeah.
I think we all ended up getting kind of what we wanted out of it.
Right.
So I think it was good for all of us.
And I'm sorry, maybe you already said this, but did your sous chef follow you to Blue Jay?
Yeah. And he is becoming the latest resident of Littleton, North Carolina here in a couple of weeks. So.
Number 1,243?
Like 743.
It's good to have your team with you, though. I mean, because after a while, I mean, you have a style, you have a rhythm, you have... nervous tics or whatever it may
very
be.
Much so.
And you need someone that can like speak to that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, consistency is key, because man, especially when you're doing that type of job and there's so many hours that go through it, it's like, yeah, you need your tribe in a sense to help you out. And a sous chef, that's your bloodline right there.
Yeah, for sure.
In the kitchen. That's cool.
Right. Well, speaking of what's in my blood right now, what's in my veins.
Ooh, I'm feeling it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not jittery. I'm feeling good.
Feeling great.
It's because I'm drinking some Joe Van Gogh Organic Columbia Inza, the Inza coffee that we're part of our tribe, Matt. Elizabeth over here, she's part of the tribe. Elizabeth's worked with me at countless places now. Kept kind of bringing her around. She's like sous chef over here in a sense. And she brewed all this coffee earlier today. And this particular one, the Inza, comes from... oh my God, I can't even pronounce this. Kausa? Kauka? How do you say C-A-U-C-A, Matt, in Espanol? Causa, I would
Causa.
Say. Yeah, it's from Causa. It's or a high elevated coffee Coca. With stone fruit, citrus, cocoa notes. It's located in the department, east of Department Causa, and it's high elevation Colombian-based coffee. It's delicious. Come check it out. Go to jovango.com to learn more information from them. And plus, go visit out one of their coffee shops all over the Triangle. They got coffee shops in Durham, Hillsboro, Raleigh, just around the corner over here at Sir Walter Raleigh Coffee. They're proudly pouring it. So give them a chance. Give them a taste.
Mm-hmm. Delicious. All right. So, well, before we get back into it, and there's a lot to talk about, I do have to talk. Like, are you, every chef in North Carolina is friends with Matt Register, at least on Facebook. Are you?
I don't think I am.
Oh, my God. Well, Matthew Register, I'm calling you out because your number one seed of best sneaker chef, like I said, has been...
Shoe game.
Yeah, you've been demoted to number two. Shoe game.
Yeah. So, curious. Yeah.
These are Jordans, right?
Jordan 1s.
Yeah, Jordan 1s.
Yeah, retro Jordan 1. It's the King and Queen. So, yeah. Hearts and Spades, King and Queen. I'm a huge sneakerhead. Like, that's my side hustle.
Oh, yeah.
I've been doing this.
Oh, yeah. Put them up on the camera.
Yeah. Look at those things.
Ha! Show off. Yeah, I like this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my kicks are a big deal. I get a lot of a flack, I guess, there's a lot of talk about me because I'm also the chef that wears boots in the restaurant. So, like cowboy boots and sneakerhead. There's a lot going on with me.
Oh, so you're not only a sneakerhead, you wear the
cowboy. I wear cowboy boots in the kitchen.
Wow. Are those non-slip?
Yes, they are.
Really?
Yeah. Like, if you cut me, I just bleed Texas flags. So, like, it's kind of just a thing.
It's fine. You're good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking maybe we could have one of, like, there's this cool shop in Raleigh called DTLR, or another one, donate some Jordans for your Chef Series auction and to help raise money for Right for Revival.
That would be dope.
Yeah, which is something that we could add to. So speaking of this, another big part of what you guys are doing is, we have Sarah Hester from Ripe for Revival. We've had Ripe Revival in on the show, which you're also a part of, which make my favorite gummies in North Carolina, using produce that's been discarded or otherwise not used and make them into these great nutritious snacks. And so you can speak more about that, but I'll just say hi to Sarah and welcome her in because you've hired Ashley and Blue Jay Bistro, not hired, partnered with her, to do this, to help you raise money for Ripe for Revival. So can you talk a little bit about that and what you're doing?
Sure. So you know Ripe Revival, and it's for-profit business, always had that mission to give back to communities, revive communities through food. And that spawned into a creation of a nonprofit that specifically just does that good work. And one of the programs in there is a mobile market, and that's a renovated transit bus, which I'm sure you'll show some pictures of, but yeah. It's a bus that's a grocery store on wheels that goes into communities in North Carolina and makes food accessible. So it not only makes it accessible by going to the community, but it also is a pay what you can market. So someone with whatever amount of dollars they have in their pocket can have the opportunity to purchase something healthy and partake in that. So
I just want to say I love that model, not only because, but I was explaining this. My son, who, happy birthday, Cam, he's going to be 6 tomorrow, so he'll be 6 years old in 2 days by the time this comes out.
Wow.
Six years old. Yeah, holy, it's pretty cow. Amazing.
Happy birthday, Cam.
Happy birthday, Cam. He was asking me, what if somebody can't afford it, or what if somebody paid it? And I said, there's actually a pay-what-you-can restaurant, and people who can't afford it, if they have one penny or they have $10, whatever, it's what they can pay. And so just the concept of that, being able to explain it to a five-year-old, mm-hmm. was enlightening because it makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... we just launched it not too long ago, so we're in the fundraising stages, right? It's the mobile market. It's active. We've had a few events. But this fundraiser event, it's called the Supper Club Chef Series, Reviving the Supper Club. Play on words. Again, we're all about that.
Got a brand.
So it's a series. The first episode of the series, we partnered with Chef Ashley at Blue Jay Bistro. And so it's a virtual supper club. So if you've ever heard of a supper club, it's kind of... you meet at a house, either the whole host cooks the whole meal or it's like a potluck, you come together, just mingle, it's usually themed. And so this is a virtual supper club where we're going to a restaurant virtually into the kitchen, into the bar of that restaurant, highlighting that restaurant, that chef, partnering with them like we did with Chef Ashley, and all in the effort to raise money and raise funds for these types of programs. Specifically, this mobile market program is what we raise money for. So we will go to Chef about this, but we went into the kitchen and the bar of the bistro, and she prepared a wonderful menu for us. And we actually, so folks would buy a ticket, and that would ensure them access to the link, so they could log in. It's a live stream, so they could log in. And they would also get a meal kit shipped to their house. And that meal kit had most everything that they needed besides like oil, salt, pepper, for that meal, that she had created. So it's a lot of back work, right? So we had a menu set, we sourced everything, most everything from North Carolina, packed it, shipped it anywhere over the U.S. And then folks could partake in, cooking right along Chef. So she gave great instruction. That night.
How long was the whole event? Like, what was the experience like?
It was on a Tuesday night. The bistro was closed on a Tuesday night. So it was a Tuesday night from 6 to 7:30, I think we ended. And it's the first episode of the series. So we're moving right along with more chefs in North Carolina, hopefully with y'all's help. And
yeah, because you have one on the calendar that you're ready to do in November. Is that right?
Yeah, we don't have the date nailed down just yet, but we're hoping to do one in November, mid-November, I believe.
And you have a couple of chefs in mind, but it's an open call right now.
It sure is.
If a lot of our chef friends, I'm calling you, Alex Ricci, Kevin Ruiz, Kyle Tears, all these people, just calling them out.
Matt Register,
that would be perfect. Oh, yeah. Oh man, I can't imagine the shoes he would wear.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity to put your name, your restaurant name out there.
How would they contact you, or how would they get involved?
You can follow Ripe Revival on any kind of social media and reach out to us there. You can email us info@RipeRevival or Ripe4Revival. Either way, it'll probably be me answering you. So okay. Just reach out.
Cool. Yeah. And so for people that want, first of all, actually, before we even get into plugging it more, what did you make, Ashley, or what did you have other people make?
So we made a barbecue butter shrimp, sweet potato salsa, cilantro lime rice using Tidewater grain rice. And we had a salad that was like a bonus recipe. So a salad with coconut lime vinaigrette. And then we had this killer sweet potato Mai Tai.
So is this something that you would typically make at the bistro?
Yes and no. So the barbecue butter shrimp is actually on our menu right now.
Okay.
But that dish is different. So we have sweet potato salsa that has come and gone off our menu. So it was kind of like components of things that we do at the restaurant so that people could kind of get a little bit of a flavor for what we do, but also, you know, it was technically my night off Tuesday, and during the summer I have like a real thing for tiki. During COVID, I was actually slinging tacos out of my house, and I had like a tiki night on Fridays. Wow. So we did like a Mexican Hawaiian fusion kind of thing. So that it's kind of like fun. A thing that's carried over for me, and so we kind of took a play on like, okay, well, it's my day off, so like, what would I do? But also, like, I want these, you know, I want everybody to be able to experience some of the stuff we do at the restaurant. So.
Love that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Making cocktails too, I assume, at your day off when you're doing the...
Of course.
Yeah.
So
that
we
sounds fun.
In the box was a sweet potato mixer that we had made at the restaurant. And then we kind of had a recommendation. We were using Raleigh white rum. That's really hard to say, Raleigh white rum.
Yeah.
we were using that. And so it was a really killer cocktail. Something I drank.
That's fun.
So and we got to drink it while we were cooking. So you can't go wrong.
Yeah. We've been doing so much crazy, like... prep and menu development because we're putting out a new cocktail menu coming out soon over at Craft, and it's like all we've been doing is like R&Ding so many cocktails. Everyone's like, that's pretty good. Oh, now I'm drunk.
Yeah.
But it could be worse.
That is funny though, because it's the season, right? Like you should be getting ready for fall cocktails, but in North Carolina it's hard because it's like summer produce goes through late August and then the weather's still hot to like mid-October. So
Well, even like
shout out. Seems a little early though, no?
We were just talking about watermelon earlier, and even just our friends over there at Waiho who crushed that watermelon cocktail. I think they're working with,
created by Max Shrew. Yeah,
that's still, you know, that's always up for debate because everyone says they created. Everyone always says that they created the thing that's the coolest thing. No one ever lays claim to the one that never sold. You know what I mean? Everyone, I mean, even old Jason the bartender will still to this day say, "I made that drink," and I'll go get. Just throw yourself out this window right now. There's no way you made that drink. You were in the room when it was created. That's just like when Bieber's song, The Peaches in Georgia, whatever, it has like 19 writers of that song.
Yeah.
It's like, did really 19 people need to write that song? It's just there were 19 people in the room when the song was written. So legally, they all lay claim like, I think I said use the instead of a on that one line. It's like, damn it, now that guy's a writer on this song. So yes, Jason, you may have created part of that cocktail, but no. Yeah, whatever. Anyways, but Ripe Revival has been using, they do watermelon juice, which is really awesome because watermelon, like I just juiced one this weekend and it sang to me. It was like, oh, the season is perfect right now. Mm. I've been tasting watermelon juice every day from March until now and it's fine. And it's like, okay, watermelons are good. They're okay. And then I just got a new, like a different type of watermelon. I started juicing it and I went, oh, we're at peak season right now.
Yeah.
It's perfect right now at this very moment. But that's why Ripe Revival has all the watermelon juice, too, that you could get. Look at that. What a plug. What a free plug over here, everybody.
Yeah, last time you guys were here, you were just talking about releasing. I don't think it was released yet, the juice. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got samples of it, but it was not released yet. Yeah.
Yeah, so we have frozen pails of watermelon puree. A farmer didn't have a home for his watermelons one summer, so we hate to see that go to waste, right? And so that's all in the mission of trying to capture that and find a home for it. So we just decided to take the risk and freeze it and see if we can sell it. And we have been. So breweries are using it. It's unpasteurized, but breweries are using it. People are making cocktails out of it, like Y Hill. We're actually going to lunch at Y Hill later. I think they made like a hard seltzer with it this summer, too. So, yeah. But the Chef Series, back on that, we used the Sweet Potato Mai Tai. We forgot to mention, we partnered with the Sweet Potato Commission in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And we're the number one grower of sweet potatoes in the U.S.
Yep.
And so our state and our agriculture industry is strong. And so we used those sweet potatoes twice, the Mai Tai that she created and the salsa, which I am going to be remaking that salsa over and over and again. And Chef Ashley, you said it that goes really well with eggs, so I'm excited for my next breakfast. I'm going to put that with some eggs.
Oh, salsa and eggs. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I mean, you did say earlier that you kind of grew up in a Tex-Mex restaurant, and you obviously grew up in Texas. But is that part of your culinary style? Like, do you kind of lend to go back to those roots, those Texas roots, when you're developing flavors and menus?
Yeah, very much so. You know, we kind of joke, like, you can't beat the Texas out of me. It's It is a lot of what we do. I mean, I think there's a lot on the menu that we have that kind of like lends itself to that. It's interesting. But yeah, it's definitely in the background of a lot of what we do.
I love that. Yeah. And it's great just to get, that's like all the conversations we've been having with all of our chefs on the show recently have just been like what Southern cooking is or whatever it is. It's just an amalgamation of what is now connected to what you grew up with, and it's kind of nice that you're getting people like coming out here, even like was it Nick Damp when we were talking about his barbecue, like he's doing kind of East Texas barbecue and is in a state, North Carolina, that's really well known for whole hog, you know, pork barbecue. And it's like, yeah, but who cares, let's just do what we want now, because that's what it is. It's the evolution of the culinary design and what it needs to be.
Yeah, it evolves. Wait, I have a question before you go further, because I heard salsa and eggs, and this revelation came to me. I want to, Elizabeth, put this on the poll. Do you put ketchup on your eggs?
No.
You put ketchup on your eggs? Okay, that's okay.
We have like six people in the room. Let's see. Raise your hand if you put ketchup on your eggs.
If there's potatoes beside it, maybe.
But you put salsa on your egg. I put ketchup.
I'm going to.
Okay, so you're both in California. Elizabeth put ketchup on your, and you don't. Do you put ketchup?
I'm a hot sauce.
You're hot sauce. Or hot sauce. I think that's kind of... I put ketchup and hot sauce on
okay,
eggs.
Well, would you...
I did that the other day when I was preparing something, and they're like, oh, ketchup on your eggs? Wow, that's a northerner thing. I was like, isn't a regional thing? But I don't know. I think maybe it's just a personal... Yeah, how you grew
ketchup
up.
Ketchup on anything is kind of like... I feel like an apology to the thing that you're putting it on. You're just...
Oh, I don't know.
It's like, just it's like the food wasn't good enough, so I'm just going to put something that's like super umami, like it's super sweet, and you know, it's like the sugar in the ketchup just kind of hides all the things. But like, if you put some sriracha on there, or put some fresh salsa on there.
Or hot sauce.
Come on.
I think it's all the same because, I mean, it's the same point. If you put hot sauce on, it's the same thing. No. You could speak, by the way, and borrow a microphone. We have your mixologist.
Our number one ketchup booster over here. Just say hello. Introduce yourself.
He's like dying because he puts ketchup on everything. He'll eat ketchup just like straight out of the jar. He'll just eat ketchup.
Who is he?
I'm Zeev Sherman. I'm the food and beverage director at Blue Jay Bistro.
Yeah. And so you're a big ketchup guy. So how many ketchup cocktails do you have on three?
Do you have ketchup on all the tables at Blue Jay Bistro?
No ketchup on any of the tables. Okay. I don't think we can have it in the bistro at all. You know, if we had it, it would be like a like housemaid style, not called ketchup.
Yeah.
So that's
another big debate because you know a lot of chefs feel that. And I won't name those chefs anymore, but a lot of chefs feel that Heinz, like, perfected it. So it's like, if you're just trying to fix ketchup, then what's the point? You're spinning your wheels.
It's not called ketchup. It's
a tomato sauce? Catsup?
If we have ketchup on the menu, it's going to use like some of our local produce. We want to showcase like it'll be a blackberry ketchup, it'll be a blueberry ketchup. Like, if somebody comes in the restaurant and they ask for ketchup, I'm going to give them Heinz ketchup in a pretty bowl.
Okay.
Put it on the table.
Yeah. Oh,
but
okay.
But
if you're going to do something special, you're
really
going to
use...
sad. I like... be sad. Like,
you're putting ketchup on a well-done steak. It makes me sad. But I mean, I'm going to do it.
Well, you're probably already upset about the well-done steak.
Yeah,
Might as well be doubly upset.
We went through that whole change probably just in the last 10 years where taking condiments and salt and pepper off the tables like just happened. I remember being at a restaurant and... Even really fine dining restaurants, like nice places. We were at Cafe Del Rey. We always had salt and pepper on the table. And like most restaurants, you had salt and pepper on the table. But again, like using the apology like word or phrase on that is like, yeah, I get it. Chef Ashley, you made this food, but I'm going to alter it and change it to the way I want. And it almost kind of seems offensive too. Yeah, it's like would we do that with cocktails? Like, we're also just going to put like a couple bitters and a lime and a lemon on the table when you order your cocktails. Like, it's good, but let me show you how it's done.
Well, I could make the same excuse then for cocktails. It's like adding sugar and simple syrup is just an excuse to sweeten all the ingredients.
No, but that's secondary. Like, if it's in the recipe, then that's how it's made.
Like, if you give the customer a squeeze bottle of their own simple.
Right. That's the ketchup.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be, but maybe that's what we need to do.
Maybe that's what you need. Because everyone has a different threshold, right? For sweetness, for salt, for all of that.
Yeah. But I don't buy it. Wait, go ahead.
No, but the pandemic sort of helped us in that regard. We'd be like, we can't have the condiments on the table. We're trying to reduce the amount of hands that are touching things.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
And so we sort of snuck that in there a little bit, too.
Don't get me started about what the pandemic gave us rights to do, not do. Like, let's not even get on an airplane and be like, we can't use cash anymore. That's un-American, goddammit. It's legal tender. And like the snotty flight attendant is just like, we don't take cash anymore. It's like
that bothers you?
Yes, because it's money.
I can't understand why that, but I hate carrying cash on me. I love
it's the fact
like,
that you're not allowed, like someone is saying, no, your dollar does not spend here any longer. I have a problem with that.
I'm totally okay with that.
Get off
we'll
my
agree,
lawn.
We'll agree to differ there.
Do you take this don't tread on me flag as currency? I'm kidding. I realize California, you're so far away from me now.
Seriously.
I've come so far.
Driving an F-150 and wearing camo colors. I don't even know you anymore.
Look at my wallet.
Yeah.
The wallet is camo colored. No. Anyhow.
Yeah, but all right, so... So, okay, before we move on, we forgot to plug. So we know how a chef can get in touch, but if you want to join the chef series or you want to find the mobile bus or donate, how do you find out more about that? Still go to ripeforrevival.com, and it's Ripe, F-O-R, Revival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could go to riperevival.com, and it'll pan to everything. But okay. RipeForRevivalDoesExist.com or Ripe Revival on social media, Facebook, Instagram, all the things. Cool. This is the first episode. We had great sponsors. I mentioned the Sweet Potato Commission. Another one that you guys need to have on the podcast is Tidewater Grain Company. They're commercial growers of rice in North Carolina. So they're growing, milling, and distributing rice in North Carolina, which you're going to have to
That's
have on.
That's cool. But why is it called Tidewater? Isn't that out of Florida?
Tidewater is a region. So they're in the Tidewater region of North Carolina, which it goes all the way up to, I think, like Virginia, even more. So, I mean, we could probably both speak to them. They're awesome guys.
That's definite. Yes.
That sounds cool.
Book them. Yeah.
So they're reviving in their own sense a crop that hasn't been grown in over 120 years. And so you think about rice, it's very simple, but the whole night, the whole menu really spoke to like elevation of these simple ingredients. And like completely the home chef probably hasn't cooked cilantro rice in the way that chef instructed her or used. We use micro cilantro from a grower in Raleigh, and they incorporated that. And
ooh, how'd you incorporate the cilantro into the rice? I'm curious. Mm-hmm. What was your technique?
So at the end of it, we sort of minced up micro cilantro, and Tommy Wheeler from Tidewater Grain hates cilantro. So I was like, please eat this cilantro. It's very different. And so, yeah. But it was cool, you know, to have people. My father also hates cilantro, and he was cooking along at home. And
when you say hate, though, there's a people who have like tastes like soap.
Yeah, it tastes like soap. A micro cilantro is very cool because it's different. It's not the same. It doesn't have some of the same nature that like full adult cilantro has.
Okay.
And so it was interesting because my dad and Tommy both said that they really enjoyed it. It has like a fruity floral note to it that isn't like overpowering like that soap flavor that a lot of those folks get. So I thought that was really interesting.
So a little chef hack there, micro cilantro will fix.
It's not just cute. It's also tasty. Mm.
Before we get out of here, let's kind of finish with talking about going back to Littleton, but also just Blue Jay Bistro and everything that kind of encompasses it, because it's not just the bistro that you're connected with and the bar and all, and perhaps both of you can speak, and if you even want to grab that microphone too, but there's a lot, like you can stay out there, there's like expand upon the environment, because it's not just Blue Jay, and let us know, there's a whole reason to go out to Littleton beyond just eat at your restaurant. I know that would be be the only reason, but what else is going on out there?
So we're a part of a greater plan to economically redevelop the area. Halifax County is one of the poorest counties in North Carolina. I believe it's if I'm not mistaken, it's in the top three, maybe in the top five, but definitely up at the top of the list. And so Ripe Revival's mission of sort of a pay-as-you-can mobile market really spoke to us, because that's part of what we're doing out there, is working on breaking the cycles of generational poverty by providing places to work and sort of being involved in the community and giving people, like, I don't care if you've never worked in a professional kitchen, I'll teach you. We'll give you livable trades. We'll teach you how to do these jobs. Nowhere I've been do I want a bunch of CIA-trained chefs. I think a couple of them are cool, but I'd rather have a bunch of people that are, like, just trying to earn a living and, like, you know, learn a craft and learn a trade.
Yeah.
So part of what we're doing at the restaurant is sort of working on that cyclical generational poverty and sort of giving people those trades. We also have a coffee shop adjoined to us called Daphne's Coffee Shop, named after our owner's mother, who is actually from Littleton. We are also joined by a retail wine shop. At our one stoplight, if you hit our one stoplight and take a left. We also are in the process.
What is the retail wine shop out there?
Main Street Wines.
Okay.
We're on Main Street. It's Main Street Wines.
That's already selling. Always selling. Always be closing.
Yeah. And then our school actually starts school here in a couple weeks, called Littleton Academy. So we're actually working on a private school out there that'll be K-12, focus a little bit more on trade-based, hands-on skill learning. To kind of keep people in the area. You know, for a long time, there wasn't a lot of opportunity. There wasn't educational opportunities, career opportunities. And so kind of reinvesting in this town and giving folks a reason to feel proud and want to stay there, as opposed to having to come to Raleigh and pursue other opportunities. So kind of investing in that. So the school will be a big part of that. The school is joined by Lakeland's Cultural Arts Center. That's a huge draw. There's nowhere to see movies, really, outside of Roanoke Rapids, which is about 30 minutes from us. So when Lakelands isn't putting on a production, which is really cool that they do, and they've been really well thought of for a long time, theater productions, but they'll also be able to show movies there, which will be really neat.
There's one thing that caught my eye about the Halifax area, the Cryptozoology and Paranormal Museum.
Look, Steve is a good friend. He'd be so upset if I didn't mention this.
What
so,
is going on there? I'm like, it's the coolest. I want to go so bad to see this.
It's legit. And they've just moved to a new location up the street from us. The Cryptozoology Museum is a huge draw. Steve Barcello is the gentleman that owns it. He's been on like Nat Geo. He's all over YouTube. He's done a bunch of features.
Matt, their logo has Bigfoot in the middle of it, just to give you an idea.
It's a big deal. Yeah, Steve's a big deal. So a lot of people come out there during the summer to kind of visit that and hit that. And then we're like they come to us secondary, which is kind of cool. Like, I don't mind that. But yeah, that's a big draw out there as well. So there's a lot of stuff going on in a little town.
This is really cool because, you know, I know a lot of chefs are doing this, and this has become more of the fashion over the last 10, 15 years. But the fact that chefs not only like caring what's in their food, but really doing community outreach, and this is really community, like you're really invested in this town, and it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, that's really our first, I think our first priority. Yeah. And, you know, the restaurant is important. Yes, it's formal. Yes, it's like fine-ish dining, but with a lot of fun. But our first priority is to make sure that we're a part of the community, we're a part of the town, we're giving back, and that we're not just there to like, we just set up a fine dining restaurant in the middle of nowhere. Like, no, we're part of the community and we're proud to be in Littleton and live in Littleton.
Yeah. So asking for a friend, where should I stay when I come out to visit?
Look at this guy.
There's a ton of Airbnbs.
Yeah. But like, do you just Airbnb and you Google Lake Gaston or you put in Littleton or...
So there are several in Littleton. A friend of ours has several that are really close to downtown and close to the Cryptozoology Museum.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of options in town. And even if you do stay in town, you're like 10 minutes from the lake.
Okay.
So it's really not, you know, it doesn't matter which way you go. But yeah, I mean, there's a ton of Airbnbs. And then outside of that, your closest option would be Roanoke Rapids.
Ooh, that's 30 minutes.
But there is a lot of good real estate if somebody wanted to open a hotel.
Yeah.
You talk to Summit Hospitality out there.
I know, right? Get them going. Yeah. Well,
very cool.
Thank you so much for coming on out here, discussing not just Littleton, but everything that you're doing with Ripe Revival and the Chef Series. This is great. I love seeing, even just Sarah to you, like I love seeing the evolution since the last time that we had everybody on the podcast speaking about Ripe Revival. It was like semi-new. It was kind of new as a new company. And just when I'm going to random shops and I think I was at the butcher's market recently. I bought a couple of packs of the dried fruit, the little gummies there, and you can get them all over the place. And it's really cool just to see growth and evolution and growth within these companies that I feel are doing it the right way and kind of helping out, supporting the company or community, but also like helping themselves so that they can do more as it grows and becomes, you know, it's not just like this straight up nonprofit where they're not trying to do anything. Like, we're just fine being right here. It's like, no. How about we just be a business and grow?
Yeah.
And then by growing and being bigger, we can send our message even deeper and do more. So I appreciate that.
Again, another plug for the Chef Series.
Yeah.
Looking for another chef.
Yeah.
Traveling all across North Carolina, east, west, doesn't matter. Coming into your kitchen, giving you marketing, and all for a great cause, right? All raising funds. Got great sponsors, Sweet Potato Commission, Tidewater Grain, and this time we actually had a sponsor, Ag Carolina Farm Credit and Cape Fear Farm Credit, and they pledged to actually match donations from all the ticket sales that we accrued and that we all sold. So make an even bigger impact for sure. And so that'll keep going, and we'd like to have more chefs on our team and work with more chefs.
So cool. How far is Garland from Littleton?
That's pushing it. That's going to be far. Like 2.5 hours, I'd say, because Garland's a good hour and a half from here.
That's nothing for Matt.
For Matt.
Yeah. I mean, not that I'm calling him out or anything.
Wait, you really want Matt to be the chef?
I think it's a natural next connection.
All right, Matt, Mr. Register,
you've been put on notice. Cool. Well,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming in and making the trip out here to our studio. And Sarah, thanks for connecting us all. So for everybody out there, first of all, check out Ripe for a Revival Chef Series and Reviving the Supper Club. And you can get all the information on where these supper clubs are happening, where the mobile grocery stores, and how you can support all of that. And then it's pretty clear you need to get out to Littleton. Go eat at Blue Jay Bistro, and you will eat and drink extremely merrily.
Thanks for listening to the NCF&B podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes, and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.